You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN Energy's daily blog, the oil and gas industry's go-to source for insight. Every day, we cover commodity fundamentals, industry changes, and developing trends across energy markets. And now, we're making it easier than ever to enjoy our blogs. Whether it's on your drive into work, while you're at the office, or at home walking the dog, settle in, turn the volume up, and enjoy.
Tuesday, October 27, 2020. Travel and clean. LNG as bunker fuel winning converts, as shipping industry eyes future CO2 rules. Published by Housley Carr. Back in January, when the International Maritime Organization implemented more stringent limits on sulfur emissions for large, ocean-going vessels, the vast majority of shipowners and charterers complied with the new rule, commonly referred to as IMO 2020, by switching to very low sulfur fuel oil or gas oil. A few others stuck with old, higher sulfur bunker but installed scrubbers to remove sulfur from the engine exhaust. A third option, fueling ships with LNG, is now gaining traction, in part because it could help shipping companies deal with future IMO mandates on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Orders for new-build LNG-powered vessels and LNG bunker ships are rolling in, and plans for port infrastructure to support LNG bunkering are being implemented. Today, we begin a series on the growing use of LNG in global shipping. Our regular readers know that the IMO, a specialized agency of the United Nations, in recent years has been implementing ever-tightening rules to reduce allowable sulfur oxide emissions from the engines that power the 50,000-plus tankers, dry bulkers, container ships, and other commercial vessels plying international waters. As we explained in our blog called Against the Wind in January 2012, the global cap on sulfur content in bunker or marine fuel was reduced to 3.5% from the old 4.5%, and on January 1, 2020, the sulfur cap was reduced to a much stiffer 0.5%. There were and still are even tougher standards for sulfur already in place in the IMO's emission control areas, or ECAs, which started with Europe's Baltic and North Seas, then was adopted in areas within 200 nautical miles of the US and Canadian coasts, with more to follow. In July 2010, the ECA sulfur limit in marine fuel was reduced to 1% from the old 1.5%, and in January 2015, the limit was ratcheted down again to a very stringent 0.1%, a standard that remains in force within the ECAs. And in a four-part blog series, The Thunder Rolls, we discussed in some detail the preparations that shipowners, refiners, blenders, and bunker suppliers made in anticipation of IMO 2020's implementation. Chief among these were refiners' efforts to 1. Increase their output of higher-value low-sulfur products that can be used to help make rule-compliant bunker. And 2. Reduce their production of bottom-of-the-barrel high-sulfur residual fuel oil, or RESID, used to produce high-sulfur fuel oil, or HSFO, which has sulfur content of up to 3.5%. Much of this was accomplished through changes in refinery crude slates, that is, switching to lower sulfur crude, and in tweaks to refinery equipment and operations. In all around the world at the end of last year, we said that, despite all the angst in the shipping industry and refining sector in the months leading up to the new rules implementation on January 1st, there was enough rule-compliant VLSFO to go around. And while there was an upward spike in VLSFO prices to more than $700 per metric ton in December 2019, prices quickly fell, and kept falling, at one point to less than $200 per metric ton, as COVID-19 spread and the global economy slowed. VLSFO prices are currently in the $300 to $400 per metric ton range, depending on the port. While most shipowners and charterers opted to switch to VLSFO or marine gas oil, some opted to continue running their engines on HSFO and installing scrubbers to remove sulfur from the exhaust gases, another way to comply with IMO 2020. The economic rationale for scrubbing is that the cost of installing and operating scrubbers would be recouped, and more, through the savings associated with buying cheaper HSFO rather than more expensive VLSFO. However, the price spread between the high and low sulfur fuels has been much smaller than expected, raising questions about whether taking the scrubbing approach is a good idea. Today, we turn our attention to a third alternative for IMO 2020 compliance, using LNG as bunker fuel. LNG appears to offer a number of benefits, including the fuel's very low emissions, near zero sulfur and particulate, or soot, for example, and low nitrogen oxide emissions too. Also, fueling ships with LNG generates 20% less carbon dioxide, or CO2, a key greenhouse gas, than fueling them with VLSFO or HSFO. More on that in a moment. In addition, natural gas-based ship propulsion is a mature technology that has been used successfully for many years, with the U.S. leading the way with large roll-on-roll-off cargo ships trading to Alaska and Puerto Rico from the lower 48. And don't forget that large LNG carriers have long used LNG boil-off to power their engines, a topic we discussed in our recent Sultans of Swing series. These pros are countered to some degree by cons, including somewhat higher engine and tank costs, the extra space needed onboard for LNG tanks. An LNG storage tank is about 1.8 times the volume of distillate tank holding an equivalent amount of fuel energy, and the lack of LNG bunkering, or fueling, infrastructure at most ports. That last issue is particularly important. Shipowners and charterers understandably need to know that if, over a year's time, their vessels are moving from point A to points B through Z and back again, that there will be no issues, no challenges, and no problems with fueling the ships for their next voyages. There's something else that folks in international shipping need to factor into their decision-making. In addition to implementing tougher and tougher rules on sulfur emissions, the IMO is requiring that ocean-going vessels significantly improve their energy efficiency and is considering requirements to reduce the international shipping sector's greenhouse gas emissions by at least 40% below their 2008 level by 2030, and as much as 70% by 2050. Those target dates may seem far away, but remember that container ships, pure car and truck carriers, or PCTCs, and other large vessels are costly long-term investments, and therefore, shipping companies put a heck of a lot of thought into what they are ordering, including which fuel will power their new ships. We should note here that LNG is viewed by some as a sort of transition shipping fuel to zero-carbon alternatives, each entailing its own challenges, such as liquefied biomethane, or LBM, produced from biomass, and liquefied synthetic methane, or LSM, produced from renewable electricity. With strict greenhouse gas limits likely only a few years away, shipowners and charterers are giving LNG a hard long look. We understand from CLNG, an international group promoting the use of LNG as shipping fuel, that about 170 large LNG-fueled vessels already are in operation around the world, and that another 220 or so are on order. There also are more than 600 large LNG carriers, most of which are fueled at least in part by boil-off from the LNG they are transporting. Further, there are more than 40 ports in North America, Europe, and Asia that either offer LNG bunkering already or are planning to do so soon. A total of about 20 LNG bunker vessels are operating at a number of these ports, and at least as many bunker vessels are being built. We'll discuss the build-out of LNG-fueled vessels and LNG bunker operations and ships in more detail in the next blog in this series. We'll also look at the outlook for LNG demand by the international shipping industry. Travel and Clean was written by Jimmy Buffett and Lanny Fiel, and is the second song on Side B of Buffett's High Cumberland Jubilee album. It was recorded in 1971 in Berry Hill, Tennessee, with Travis Turk producing. Buffett was signed at the time to Andy Williams's record label, Barnaby Records, which had released his Down to Earth LP in 1970. After the failure of Down to Earth to make much of an impact, Barnaby Records claimed that the masters to High Cumberland Jubilee had been lost. After Buffett signed with Dunhill Records in 1973 and enjoyed real success after the release of his Dunhill debut, A White Sport Coat and A Pink Crustacean, Barnaby miraculously found the master tapes and released the lost album, High Cumberland Jubilee, in 1976. The personnel on the record were Jimmy Buffett on lead and background vocals, Lanny Fiel on guitars, Rick Fiel on bass, Paul Talbot on drums, Bergen White on trombone, Bobby Thompson on banjo, Randy Goodrum on keyboards, and Buzz Kaysen on keyboards and background vocals. Jimmy Buffett is an American musician, songwriter, singer, author, actor, and businessman. In addition to his successful music career, Buffett is a best-selling author and owns two restaurant chains, Margaritaville Cafe and Cheeseburger in Paradise, both named after hit songs of his. Buffett fans are known the world over as Parrotheads. He has made 27 studio albums, 11 live albums, and 67 singles, and has sold over 20 million albums worldwide to date. Buffett describes his musical stylings as Gulf and Western. He has won 3 Country Music Association Awards and 1 ASCAP Award. His Margaritaville Cafe in Orlando, Florida, once held the Guinness World Record for the largest cocktail, a margarita that measured 8,500 gallons, or about 202 barrels in oil speak. Jimmy Buffett still tours with his Coral Reefer Band.
This has been the RBN Energy Blogcast. Thanks for listening.